All right, let's call this meeting of the House Health and Social Service to order. It is 3:10 p.m. on February the 6th. Present is Representative Seaton, Representative Reinbold, Representative Keller, and myself, Representative Higgins. And Representative Tarr is running late. We'll put her on record. All right, let the record reflect that we do have a quorum. There's four of us. So we can get going as far as that. Our House Recording Secretary is Butch Carber, and our LIO moderator is Kathleen Nyson. I think I said that right? And our committee aide is Julie Morris. And if anybody needs anything, just raise your hand. Julie will come get you and see if we can't help you. Now, let's turn off our electronic devices. If they are left on, I'm told they will affect our recording. If someone's phone does ring, I did not get lunch today, so we will have donuts. So let's make sure we turn them off. So today, what we have is House Bill 90, which was heard and held over from last session on February 21st. At that meeting, public testimony was still held open. We were on version U. And was adopted as a work draft. Today, we have version O. And if you will make a motion to call that in as a committee substitute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to adopt a committee substitute for HB 90, that's version LS0376O, as our working draft.
And I'll object for discussion. And so with that, Representative Seaton will give us will present explanations and changes.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the hearing on the bill. Since it was last year, I'd like to kind of bring everybody up to speed again on where we were on the version that we, or what the purpose of the bill is. The purpose was to get a one-year sampling of all newborns at birth in the state of Alaska so that we could find out what their vitamin D level was. The reason for that was we had presented a study, a 20-year longitudinal study of 750 or more women out of Perth, Australia, that showed that women that were low in vitamin D in their second trimester of pregnancy, their children had a four times rate of language impairment, severe to moderate language impairment at age 5 going into school. And at age 10, they still had a 2.25 times the rate of language impairment. In other words, at age 5, going at 13% of the children of women with low vitamin D during pregnancy had severe to moderate language impairment, whereas only 3% of those that had in their upper fourth of their population, that is above 29 nanograms per milliliter, had severe to moderate language impairment. And that was persistent even after 5 years of special education. We also presented a couple of other studies in that. One of them was from Spain and looking at neuromuscular development at age 14 months after birth, that showing that it was also significantly higher in those mothers that had good levels of vitamin D during pregnancy compared to those low. And then we looked at a study from Philadelphia that showed that 66% of the light-skinned women, their children at birth were deficient or insufficient in vitamin D at birth, and 98% of those that were dark skin. And of course, we're looking at dark skin and light skin because dark skin is basically blocking sunshine, which is an adaptation which is in very high sunny places where you don't want too much sunshine. And of course, being further north in latitude, it's almost the same thing as having dark skin, because we are in that, we don't get the sunshine just as if that, just as dark skin does the same thing. And also long sleeves, we wear long sleeves during the summer for mosquitoes, prevents the ultraviolet B rays of the sun reaching our skin, and so we don't have good vitamin D levels then. So this was, the problem is that we don't know where we are in vitamin D levels. Anything that can have this significant an impact on development and later growth and neurological development in our children is something we need to look at. So the goal of that was to take and look for 1 year, just at birth, take two drops of cord blood, and get that sample in so we would know the population and subpopulation levels of vitamin D of all the newborns across the state.
Now, can I just real quick? Did you say cord?
Cord blood. That's
cord blood. Okay.
Out of the placenta at birth, so you're not having to take a blood draw. Use cord blood.
Would that give us an accurate reading of vitamin D compared to a toe prick on the infant itself?
Yes, it does, because at birth, the infant's blood is the blood that's circulating to the placenta, and so without having to do a heel prick and take more drops of blood.
I gotcha. Makes sense.
And we've got a lot of data that shows that corresponding, as well as corresponding to the mother's blood level at birth.
Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Basically, what my question is why at birth? Why not, like, when the woman finds out that she's pregnant, you know, so she can take it then? And I still don't understand where we're going with this, because are we going to mandate? You know, which is something we don't do. So I'm just trying to figure out, you know, ultimately, what's the goal here?
That's a very good question, and that, you know, talking with committee members, we've been trying to address this. First of all, we're trying to find out the extent of our problem. We do know from other data in Australia, but these were on the frail elderly. But on the frail elderly, their bottom fourth of vitamin D population, those with the least vitamin D, actually represents the bottom half of the U.S. population. But we don't know how that is in mothers. And since there's such a grave concern of having a high population of kids going into school with severe to moderate language impairment, which is Alaska's largest single special education requiring an IEP disability going into school, that's our largest population. So we're trying to find out if there's a way, you know, where we are, and if that relates to Australia, we may be able to cure that problem. But I understand where you're coming from, and in just a minute I'll get that. So that's where we were coming with in the original bill. However, we asked the Department of Health and Social Services to be in charge of the program, and their draft fiscal note was $5.5 million to do this over 2 years. We had arranged for the testing of 10,000 samples at $30. So it's, you know, maybe government is really inefficient. So that was a problem. So the committee substitute that you have before you was an attempt to get around that and have a program within Department of Health and Social Services to go into a project that would be simply administered as a contract basis with a university and nonprofit that would do that. And so the current version, in the subsequent year, most people wanted to have the $30 test, but then everybody wanted to have more analysis, so you had greater information than just the amount. So they've gone back to their standard charge with analysis of the all the data of $60. So you'll see that in this, we're talking about, in this current version you have is 10,000 babies per year in Alaska is the average, and at $60 it would be 600,000 doing that as a program. However, you know, as Representative Reinbold just mentioned, there was some questions of how are we going to get there to see health benefits. And there was also the question of opting out. There was concern that, you know, we had the provision that people could opt out for religious reasons, but, you know, people were concerned that that opt-out wasn't broad enough. So trying to address those two things, what I would like to do is address those, and we found a way to do that. And that is, there is a program, and you have it in your packet there, which is available, which is Protect Our Children Now, which is a program that is set up under the Grassroots Health, which is a public health nonprofit working with a medical center at the or medical university in South Carolina, and Dr. Carol Wagner being the primary researcher, who has done a lot of work on pregnancy and lactation and vitamin D. This is a program that's all in existence. It's being used in Omaha. It's being used in Charleston, South Carolina. And what it does is, it's a voluntary program with 500 women become pregnant, and they do, so it's voluntary. They do a blood test in the first 12 to 16 weeks of pregnancy to establish baseline. And then what they're trying to do is, now that they know their blood level, then they can adjust that with taking vitamin D supplements. And therefore, each 10 weeks through the pregnancy, then they take another blood test to find out where they are, because what we're trying, what this is now, is a voluntary program to actually get science into a project in Alaska that gets the directly affects, as Representative Reinbold is talking about, the health of newborns and the health of women in our communities. And the interesting thing is that if you look at the cost, that's on page 21 of the handout that you have describing the entire program, it has $450,000 as the total cost, and that includes $90,000, which is for the on-site support. In other words, you're using on-site support, whether that's in a village, in a hospital, the midwives, the health providers, making sure that this program all works. So there's support for the local level. There's also $50,000 in supplements there. It, of course, you're talking about a number of births over time, so it's a two-year program, try and get all the births and all the pregnancies in the first year, but of course there's a nine-month pregnancy period that we're talking about as well. So this would give 500 participants, and of course we need to coordinate with some local groups. Now, in my understanding is in South Carolina, the Blue Cross Blue Shield has stepped up, because there's a huge cost savings. For every preterm birth, it costs about $50,000. And so this can reduce, vitamin D has been shown, demonstrated through about three different research projects, to lower the number of preterm births, preeclampsia, and those kind of things. And Dr. Wagner, the chief researcher there, is on the phone with us today, so if people have questions for her, we can do those. You also were given in your packet three of those research papers looking at the effects of having vitamin D supplementation during pregnancy and the lowering of those rates of adverse outcomes during pregnancy. So the other things that we've been looking at is trying to figure out partners here in Alaska, and I've talked to Providence Hospital. Providence Hospital is considering, going back to their board, considering being a partner on this. It's not limited to only one in Alaska. I also talked to the Native Health Board yesterday, and they may wish to do this with the Native Health Board. We have about 3,000 Native births in Alaska a year, so 500 is a good representative sample. But instead of just doing research to find out where we are, this actually does what the committee was asking. How are we going to translate this into an achievement in public health? So we would get information from this. We would know the baseline of where women were when they were pregnant. We would know what supplementation they needed to do to get themselves into that above 40 nanogram per milliliter range, which is demonstrated consistently with a lot of international studies that improves health dramatically, not only for the mother, but the mother, of course, is a source of vitamin D for the developing baby. And so that's the level at which they find that you have the best health outcomes. And so anyway, proceeding along those lines, Mr. Chairman, that's what I would like to ask the committee to look at this, because I think that solves the problem. First of all, we are not having people opt out. They get to opt in. It's a voluntary program for women that want to improve the health of themselves during their pregnancy and their babies and the baby's outcomes. We will get the data on a large enough sample that that can be applied to whatever place in Alaska or whatever demographic wishes to do this. And we could have, you know, it's also been a question whether Fairbanks Memorial might not want to do this within there. So if we're looking at hospitals that have enough enough pediatric patients that they can do this program, we could materially affect the health outcomes by partnering with you know, the Native Health Board, the Mental Health Trust. Mental Health Trust is looking at this because there are huge mental health outcomes. If we can lower by four times the number of children going into school with severe to moderate language impairments, that's a huge mental health advance for the state of Alaska. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions on the program. I also have my staff that's been working on that. If you wanted any other questions there, and we have people to testify, and so that's where I would like to leave that at this point. If there are any questions,
is there any questions, committee, at this point, or should we go to the phones?
I have several questions, Mr. Chairman, but I don't know when the appropriate time to ask them is. If it's right now, or
you can ask
okay.
them.
Okay,
Representative Reinbold.
Okay. First of all, I mean, as you know, budgets are tight, as we were just even talking, you know, about the senior cash. So I'm just not sure that the timing, you know, is appropriate on this. And it's costing about $60. Is that correct per patient?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, it costs, if we were doing this, if an individual wanted to do it on their own, it's about $60. This project, if there's multiple ones in Alaska, the $450,000 includes all of the costs. There's no cost to the patient. It includes the supplements to get them into the range they want to be. It includes all four tests. That's a test at when they enter the program in 12 to 16 weeks at what were the other were at 22 to 26 weeks, 32 to 36 weeks blood test, and at birth blood test. So it includes all of those blood tests, and there's so it's $450,000 total bill for this. However, what we're looking at is partners to come in and fund a portion of this, whether that's going to be the hospitals themselves looking at their reduced costs of adverse pregnancies, whether that's the insurance companies, the Native Health Board, or the Alaska Mental Health Trust. So this is a partnership. It's not a strictly cash out, and we're going to pay for everything on this, because it won't work unless you have on-site participation by folks that are involved and a group that wants to learn. A lot of this also includes videos and webinars for educational seminars for the medical providers, because there's a lot of people that don't know all the information of the latest research, and so that's what's provided to the medical community, whether it's Providence or Fairbanks Memorial, or whether it's Southeast.
And through the chair, can I?
Go ahead, follow up.
Okay, so the follow-up question is, it just seems to me like a general PR campaign about vitamin D. I mean, it's almost irrefutable how many benefits there are, you know, to vitamin D. But it just seems like, the cost of vitamin D is even far cheaper than even this one sample. So it just makes sense, it seems like to me, for, you know, just a general vitamin D awareness and a really good PR campaign. But with that, I'm going to ask, in Section 1, it states that the department, I'm sure that's probably Hess, shall contract with a research group that is affiliated with an accredited university. What research group is going to be contracted or contacted with, and who will have access to this information, and how much is this contract with the university going to cost?
Okay, thank you. And the CS is what we were talking about that had the, you know, $600,000 basically for those things, and that was Grassroots Health, which is a public health nonprofit, and it's the Medical University of South Carolina that's been working with this. However, I want to back up and state, as I stated, there were problems that people had with that as being opt-out and just getting data but not improving the health. So the program that we're talking about here in response to the committee's or committee members' questions is that we would go back and redraft a new CS to participate with in this Protect Our Children Now program that has this total bill for 500 women to opt in, $450,000. And we would have to generate the partners in Alaska to participate with us in this. It's going to have actual medical outcomes, improved outcomes for babies and women in Alaska. And so what I'm describing to you, Representative Reinbold, is in response to the concerns that you've said. We're talking about the CS. I'm trying to say that we're not going to go forward with that CS because it has the problems that you have identified, and so we can get around those by participating in Protect Our Children Now project. And we have a number of different folks that are examining right now about participating with us in this. So the total cost of a project is $450,000, and that would be way less depending upon who the participants would be. In South Carolina, I believe Blue Cross Blue Shield participated with them, and the March of Dimes participated doing a lot of the outreach through the community and recruiting people.
All right. Representative, let me just interrupt you for a quick minute. Let's recognize Representative Pruitt has joined the committee. Also, and just so that we're all on the same page, is that Representative Seaton does not have an intention of passing this out today. His intention is just so that we can kind of brainstorm it a little bit more. So with that, Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Seaton, do you envision for the baseline that is acquired on this? I mean, this is, I think, a little unusual. We're taking a specific piece of legislation and doing a pretty specific study, and we're saying to contract do it. So I just want to know what you envision. You know, I mean, what, where do we go from here, you know, after the study? What are you going to do with it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that what we're going to find, if it follows what's been happening in other places of the world, we're going to have much better pregnancy outcomes. You know, this is a health and social services committee. And one of the things that we have is adverse pregnancies in Alaska. We have preterm births. We have preeclampsia. We can talk about all the names of all the adverse outcomes. Those are tremendously reduced if you have adequate vitamin D. I think that what we're going to find out is, do those happen in Alaska as well as in other parts of the world where these have gone forward? If we do those, it's going to be a huge savings in costs, over time. I envision us coming out of this with a great statistical base of what is the effect of actually getting women during pregnancy to a good status in vitamin D. I would hope that a number of them would continue to participate in the project over time so that their children could be followed through time. You know, and of course, we would never know and publish or have the information on the name and the address and phone number of someone. Those would be not randomized, but those, you know, those would be taken off. But we would know how many women were there, how many children. We would know what their vitamin D levels were. We would be able to follow them over time. We now know from other studies that kids at age 4 have much better muscle development, short muscle development, and if they had adequate vitamin D during pregnancy. We don't know that for Alaska. You know, one of our problems is we want to see everything. How does it work in Alaska? What's the effect on Alaskans? We don't generally tend to accept that if something happens in Israel or something happens in Norway or Canada, we have this idea that we want to see the application and the results in Alaska. So that's what this is going to give us. And if we find out over time through this project, and it's basically a two-year project, that we're having results that are going to save us money and save the health of our newborns as they develop and go to school, I think that's going to be a tremendous value to us. Because right now, we're sitting back and just not knowing what is the effect on Alaska. I mean, we are the northernmost state in the Union. The only data that we have is randomized, is the entire United States and Canada. And Alaska and Canada are very small represented in there, because especially the northern population, because we're such a small element of the population. And so if we want to look at how it would affect our population, we have to do the studies up here. And so going away from this, from the idea of the original research, was to find out where we were, but wouldn't get any of those mothers elevated in their vitamin D, so we wouldn't see the outcome. Then we would have to decide, well, how are we going to institute this outcome? Now we have an entire project that puts the applicable science into a project of promoting the health of women, and we will know after that 2 years, we will know whether that's done the job, and we can compare that to all the women, all the pregnancies in Alaska that did not have the benefit of additional vitamin D. Right. So that's what I think we're going to come out with, Representative Keller. Does that answer your question?
Maybe this would be if there's no more questions, a good segue into, you know, online. And we have Dr. Carol Wagner. Are you on?
Yes, I'm here.
What time is it in South Carolina?
Hello, everyone. Oh, gosh, it's 7:38 or so, whatever.
Well, we appreciate...
We're 4 hours different.
We appreciate your time. So,
oh, absolutely, my pleasure.
The mic is yours.
Okay, so I was listening to Representative Seaton speak, and I think he's quite eloquent and captured the elements of the results that we have from our various studies. I would like to reiterate that in sunny South Carolina, where I live, we have profound deficiency here as well, and it has to do with our lifestyles. And so even if you're in an area where there's a lot of sunshine, if you don't go outside or if you use sunscreen, you are not able to make the vitamin D that you need. And about, if you look at what we get from our diets without supplements and what we make in our skin, about 90% of our vitamin D comes from synthesis within our skin. I also want to make a point that vitamin D is not just a vitamin. Okay, so vitamins mean that you can get it from your diet, and you can get vitamin D from your diet. Traditionally, Eskimos, having whale and seal blubber, polar bear, salmon, lots of that kind of traditional native diet, they had really good levels of vitamin D. But if you don't consume those kinds of foods, then you really you have the average American diet across various populations, you get about 200 international units of vitamin D. When you go outside in the sun in the summertime and you are in a bathing suit and you measure your vitamin D level 24 hours later, you will have generated 10,000 international units of vitamin D. So compare that to a prenatal vitamin, that's 400 international units, and what you have in the average American diet, which is 200. So the fact is we have really widespread deficiency and insufficiency throughout the United States. And in areas of the country where you're at higher latitudes, of course, Alaska being the highest, you're at greatest risk of vitamin D deficiency. And what we know is that, again, vitamin D is not really truly a vitamin. It's actually a pre-pro hormone. So if I told you that you had thyroxine deficiency, so you had low thyroid levels, you'd say, gosh, you know, Dr. Wagner, I need to correct that, right? And I'd say, of course, yes, you do. And so we would measure your level, and you would take a pill, and there would be very little discussion. Or if I told you that you had adrenal insufficiency, so your adrenal glands and your cortisol level was low, you would feel really, really sick, and you would correct that. Well, vitamin D is a precursor to one of the most active hormones in the body. It's called 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D. And that hormone actually acts in every organ system in the body, and every cell in the body has a receptor to that. And we're just beginning to understand that vitamin D impacts on immune function. So not just bones, so not just calcium metabolism. And we used to think, oh, you know, you just need this little amount of vitamin D and you correct the risk for rickets. So that was the end of the story. And what we've now discovered in the last 10 years of active research is that it really impacts on your white blood cell function. It impacts on your risk of what we call long latency diseases, so multiple sclerosis, for example. It was known for some time, at least two or three decades, that if you lived in higher latitudes, you had a higher risk of multiple sclerosis.
And Dr. Wagner?
What's the connection? Yes.
Yeah, I don't mean to interrupt you real quick, but I had a question.
Yeah.
In South Carolina, do you mm-hmm. guys have a program like what Representative Seaton is trying to do up here
mm-hmm.
in Alaska?
Mm-hmm.
And
Go ahead.
My question is, do you have any data that shows that it improves, where it saves the state money on the other end as far as birth, you know, rates from Medicare or Medicaid issues? I mean, have you guys done that yet?
We do not have the data directly in terms of cost, but what we do, so one of the papers that I think you have is the article that was published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology a year ago on the, I'm trying to think, anyway, I'm the first author, but it was the health effects. Anyway, in that paper, we had, this took place at Oak Clear Cooperative Health Centers and Northwoods Health Centers, which are, it's a community-based network within South Carolina. And what we found is that by raising the 25-hydroxyvitamin D level, you were able to reduce the risk of preterm labor, preterm birth, infection, and also hypertensive disorders of pregnancy. And so if we really looked at that and looked at the cost of a preterm birth. So the average cost of a preterm baby admitted to a neonatal intensive care unit is $60,000. And if you could prevent one of those preterm births, then you have that cost savings. And so we, so that certainly is a part of that. But to say, oh, yes, our program has been able to save these tax dollars. We are gathering that information, and we certainly would like to share that with you when we have that available.
Are there any questions of the committee?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. So, Dr. Wagner, you have the program going in, this same program, Protect Our Children Now, in what cities in it, and how far along are they? Are they just starting?
So, in Charleston, we've had the program. It hasn't been called Protect Our Children Now, but it's the same. It's a project that's funded by the Kellogg Foundation, and that started in 2012. Before that, we had our first pregnancy trial started in 2004, and the community-based project started in 2006. So, and we also have another community-based project that we are going to get started within the next year in Columbia, South Carolina, and so those are the main sites.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Keller.
Yeah, on these programs that you have going, I mean, it's just one thing you're doing, and that is acquiring the vitamin D level of newborn infants. I mean, the reason I'm asking it that way is that's the sentence we have on our statute, and I just, am wondering how you handled other factors that might be applicable, like patient history, genetics. Is there anything been done in that area, or is it just a real broad brush?
Yeah, so we are actually through the Kellogg Vitamin D, the Kellogg Foundation Vitamin D Project. We are actually measuring maternal vitamin D levels monthly. So it starts at 10 weeks of gestation, and we also collect urine, and we analyze the placenta, as well as we get cord blood. So we're looking at immune function indicators as well. But the primary outcome for this project is to look at mother's vitamin D throughout her pregnancy at birth, and to look at the children. And our plan is to follow the children. We actually have followed our original vitamin D. It was a study that was funded by the National Institutes of Child Health and Human Development. And we followed the children, some of whom are now 8 years of age. And so we did actually find differences in neurodevelopmental status as a function of vitamin D, maternal vitamin D status. And so that actually confirms here in the United States the larger trial that was mentioned by Representative Seaton about the Australian. So those are some, I don't know if that answered your question exactly, but those are some of the aspects that we're looking at as well.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to be clear, because we've got a little confusion, because what I had done was I had drafted a CS, which we have got an objection to for adopting right now, that was looking just to acquire the status of cord blood. The project that we're talking about now actually gives women the information so that they can adjust their vitamin D level during the pregnancy, and so that we actually get the health benefits of the vitamin D being elevated, and then that is what we're proposing for here. Because I heard from the committee, well, what do we do if we just do this whole big project and find out we're really low in vitamin D, which kind of everybody probably knows, but we don't know what level it is or within subpopulations. How is that going to influence public health? So what we're proposing here is not to proceed with the O version that you have before you, but to come back with a rewritten version based on Protect Our Children Now project and actually go forward and get partners in Alaska, go forward and improve the maternal status of vitamin D on a voluntary basis, and then follow those health outcomes through Alaska, just like she's been talking about with the Kellogg program that they did, where they were testing. They weren't just testing, they were testing, and then that allowed them to elevate the vitamin D status. And so what we'd be doing here in this proposal is individually letting women adjust their vitamin D status by taking different amounts of supplements, and at the next 10 weeks, if they're not up to where they want, they improve that some more. And so we actually get the health outcomes and then measure those health outcomes, not just measure the status, and have to come back and figure out how we're going to impact.
Right.
Health. So thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Wagner, we appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
I'm pretty sure that we'll probably be hearing from you again in the future. So I hope it's warm down there.
I'm sure it's warmer than where you are. But
yeah. thank you.
We've had some volatile weather. But anyway, thank you, and I guess I'll be signing out, or
yep, just
I don't know.
Yeah, just hang up, and it'll sign out automatically. All right, great.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Stephen Birch, are you on? Stephanie Birch?
Hello, this is Stephanie Birch. I'm the Section Chief for Women, Children, and Family Health, and I was just available here for questions.
Okay. Is there any questions for Stephanie?
Yeah.
Yep. Representative Keller has a question for you.
Stephanie, the data that we've had in front of us from Representative Seaton here for several years has shown some pretty promising trends, and I just want to ask you if you could undertake a study like this, or would undertake a study like this based on the evidence that is coming forward, and if not, why not, on your own without a statute?
Through the chair, Representative Keller, thank you. We've looked at this significantly, and at the present time, while I certainly can appreciate the thorough review that Representative Seaton has done looking at many of the research studies, we haven't necessarily concurred with perhaps the results of those studies in the same way that he has. I think the focus of public health, when we look at health issues and disparities, we really want to make sure that we have peer-reviewed scientific literature that is really indicating a change in practice or a standard of practice that needs to be modified or varied or advocated for. I think for us the difficulty comes in when the bills thus far have been focused on newborns. The difficulty comes in is that our agencies such as the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists, or more importantly when we're talking about newborns, the American Academy of Pediatrics, actually has not withdrew their recommendations for vitamin D levels and vitamin D supplementation. So it places us in a position from a public health perspective, we're not a research arm necessarily, to sort of taking a stand based upon guidelines and standards that are not published or currently advocated for in the literature or with our organizations that we connect with. Entities such as the Institute of Medicine, the U.S. Preventative Task Force, and the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, as well as the National Institutes of Health, have all been evaluated for the quality of evidence when we've looked at this. To take on a research study requires multiple IRBs within the state of Alaska, because we're very sensitive to our Alaska tribal partners, and they require multiple levels of IRB evaluation. So the level of effort that it would take for the department to engage in a study like this is fairly heroic, and would require a tremendous amount of lift. In addition to that, there's a lot of controversy in the literature about the type of blood testing that would be efficacious. And in a rigorous research trial, you're required to use quality methodology and certified laboratories. And so I think that we, when we looked at the committee substitute and the original bill, I think we have some concerns about, you know, how we might fit all of that into a very, very limited budget. Finally, in addition to that, the my final point is that I think we have to really be very considerate, thoughtful about if you were to engage in a research study, you do need to have an opting out process. We need to think about the 6% of deliveries that are happening out of hospitals and what would that process be. The collection of samples, the mailing of samples to a research lab. There's just really a whole lot of work that's involved in doing this. So I hope that answered your question, Representative Keller.
Yeah, thank you. That really helps through the chair. I just would ask that you monitor the process and help us make the bill, if we as it proceeds here, to be something that is usable and so that the baseline that we get will be something that the department can use, and that's going to take your input. And I get nervous when we, you know, and I understand the sponsor to saying there's more coming in another CS, but so I'm not, I do take that, you know, and understand it. But this one has one sentence, and talking about a scientific study directed by one sentence in a law we write, you know, with our limited understanding, it makes me a little nervous. So I'm getting some comfort.
And Mr. Chairman, I appreciate just noting that what was being addressed was the previous idea of doing a research project. This is not a research project. This is predominantly putting science into practice on the health with a opt-in project for Alaskan women, and it does have a grassroots health, has an international IRB institutional review board. There may be a question if we partner with the with the Native Health Board or ANTHC, there might be need to be another specific Alaskan one. But this is a voluntary opt-in program. This is not a research project, not a clinical trial project. This is actually to promote the health and get health outcomes in women in Alaska. So it's different. What we're talking about now is different than going and doing a research project and having a placebo controlled trial and those kind of things.
So thank you. Representative Reinbold, do you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Basically, what I wanted to ask you is first of all, if you could send in your concerns. I think, you know, a lot of times bills get passed and then we don't see, you know, implementation way down, like this lab has to be certified and that has to be and this, you know, all the things that happen. So you listed off, I think, three of them. I just think that it would be really nice if that was discussed up front. And second, I was really just surprised that I think you said the board of obstetrics said that they didn't recommend vitamin D supplements. Did I hear you right? And why?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, it's not so much that they're not recommending vitamin D supplementation. They haven't established in the literature or in practice what acceptable blood vitamin D levels should be for pregnant women. And I think Dr. Wagner addressed some of the fact that, you know, this is sort of being looked at and is in studies, but many of the national accrediting or national organizations that provide recommendations for practices like obstetrics and gynecology have not come out and firmly said, you know, your patients need to have, in this stage of pregnancy and in this stage of pregnancy, their vitamin D levels have to be at this particular level.
Right.
Am I answering your question?
Yes, but, I mean, you know, in all practical purposes, I mean, so do they recommend vitamin D? It just seems like that there's a pretty big pile of research that shows vitamin D is good. Now, whether we need to do anything with that is on a state level, I'm not sure. But it just sure seems like it's important, good PR out there, and to not recommend supplements, I just think is very interesting. So I just want to know, yes or no, do they recommend supplements? I understand that you don't have a certain blood level, you know, at certain phases in pregnancy, but it's just, it would be, just seems like a pretty basic thing to have some sort of a recommendation on.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I am happy to research that for you and report back.
Okay. Representative Seaton, you have a question?
Mr. Chairman, some of this does get confusing because some of the people that are being quoted, the Institute of Medicine, their job is to recommend to manufacturers what they should put in food. Their job is not to, and they don't give clinical practice guidelines. So we don't want to get that confused. We do have the United States, the Endocrine Society, which their job is, and they do recommend best clinical practices, and they have recommended 30 nanogram per milliliter as the minimum level. You also have the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, which has clinical practice guidelines of where what you should do to get people up to, and they have also adopted 30 nanogram per milliliter as the absolute minimum that anybody with cystic fibrosis should have. So we have, the obstetricians, they said their recommendation was that you didn't need to supplement unless you lived in a northern latitude, unless you had dark skin, unless you had were vegetarian, unless you were, all of which basically describes the North American population, because we're in northern latitudes. And so that unless, people forget a lot, and which describes us in Northern Europe. So I hope that we'll go forward and make sure that when we're talking about recommendations, we're looking at those that recommend best clinical practices and look at the full recommendation.
So we will. Stefan, if you can just pass those questions on that Representative Reinbold asked you on to us, we'll give them to the committee, to us, so we'll get with you. With that, we appreciate your time. If you have anything else to say?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, let's see here. I think we have in the audience, well, wait a second. I need to recognize Representative Tarr. She is now. All right, Abel. Am I saying your last name right? Voluto? I probably murdered that.
All right, for the record, my name is Abel Buldito. I'm a professor of neurobiology at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I have 30 years of experience in research from ecology to lab work to neurobiology. I do not study vitamin D, but I do study behavioral neuroscience and have done pharmacological studies and behavioral studies in rodents. And I've done some quite extensive review of vitamin D, literature review. In addition, I teach human anatomy and physiology at the university. I had 105 students last fall. I've caught up to 180. And vitamin D comes up in the first day of class. I ask everyone, are you taking vitamin D supplements? And you'd be astounded to see that more than half of them are not. And that's the first task in the course, is to take 1,000 to 2,000 international units of vitamin D every day. And, you know, Dr. Wagner, Representative Seaton have eloquently already talked about the benefits, especially for pregnant women and newborns. So I wanted just to focus on some other general health issues. So there's been a ton of studies from China to Europe to the U.S. on correlations between low levels of vitamin D and disease. There's a lot of evidence that shows that women who have breast cancer have much lower vitamin D levels than women who don't have breast cancer. For example, prostate cancer incidence and survival in veterans is related to their vitamin D level. Colorectal cancer patients have lower vitamin D levels. autoimmune diseases. Dr. Wagner talked about multiple sclerosis. The effects on the immune system are becoming more and more clear. And that's probably also connection with the cancer, where your immune system actually kills a lot of precancer cells before they ever turn into cancer. So if you're compromising your immune system by a low level of vitamin D, you're actually increasing your risk for cancer. Type 1 and type 2 diabetes, hypertension, heart disease. As Dr. Wagner said, vitamin D receptors are almost in every tissue in your body. And so it's a very important hormone. So we're talking about, you know, what is this upfront cost of $450,000 going to do for Alaskans? Well, one of the things that I think is really, really exciting about this study is the educational component of educating pregnant women to have sufficient vitamin D levels to have healthy babies being born. And the literature that I've reviewed is that it shows that the longer a person has sufficient vitamin D levels, the larger the health benefits. So what better thing can you do than starting at the birth of a baby and educating the mother about how important a good nutrition is in general, but vitamin D levels specifically, and then having that child grow up with a healthy diet and avoiding a lot of infectious diseases, learning disabilities that Representative Seaton has talked about. Let me see. I think, that's why I'm, as a scientist, I'm very excited about this study. And, of course, it's an initial study, but I think the cost savings overall, when you're thinking about those mothers and those babies getting older, maybe they will have lower levels of cancer. Maybe they will have lower levels of type 1 and type 2 diabetes. And, you know, I've seen some graphs of the current healthcare costs of the state, and they're really going up really fast. Well, And there's another thing that I wanted to address about what Representative Reinbold said about, well, why don't we just have a campaign where we encourage everyone to take vitamin D? That would be awesome to do that. You know, that would cost money too, probably. But I've seen that the best way of getting people to do what is good is to actually educate them about it and then assist them. We're doing the right thing. And this HB 90 proposal, that new proposal that Representative Seaton is putting forward to the committee, really gets to that. It gets to educating the parent as well as the kid, and that is so important in overall health.
Questions? No? Well, I agree with everything you said.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Ward Hilbert, did you want to come forward? Did you have anything to say? Because you got a question mark here for any questions.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. I'm available to respond to questions about this topic in which I have considerable interest.
Okay. Are there any questions? Ward.
I guess for the record, I'm Ward Hilbert. I'm the Chief Medical Officer with the Department of Health and Social Services.
Representative Keller.
If I might, Mr. Chair, Dr. Hilbert is a respected friend, so I just don't want him to get away with not pointing out he's the head of public health, and he's the chief doc in the state, and I have a lot of respect for him. Thank you.
You try to get away with not telling us that?
Are we allowed to ask him? Mr. Chairman, through the chair, can we ask you just your opinion on this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, as Representative Seaton pointed out, the discussion has shifted a little, and the homework that I did was on the bill that was kind of modified from last year's with the testing of the newborns, as that I understand it now. It's a sampling of opt-in moms and babies, and then following the young children. I think that Representative Seaton and I are in total agreement that vitamin D is an essential nutrient for us. that we need it in the areas of bone health. It's absolutely essential, and there's total concurrence on that. It prevents rickets if you have osteomalacia or osteopenia, the kind of demineralization of the bones. You need it. There's certain genetic bone-related diseases where you need it. But vitamin D, as you've heard today from the others testifying and as Representative Seaton has related, is receiving a great deal of attention in the country. But there are pretty diametrically opposite opposing conclusions of what the data leads to. The Institute of Medicine that Representative Seaton referred to is the medical part of the United States Academy of Sciences, and they really do look at medical issues and make weigh the evidence and come to conclusions of what the evidence supports. And in my understanding, it is much broader than advising industry. The United States Preventive Services Task Force is the entity that makes recommendations on what vaccines we should receive, but they also look at what should be the minimum daily level of vitamins, of other health-related things. The National Institutes of Health, you're all familiar with, the National Cancer Institute there. There is the Federal Agency for Healthcare Quality and Research, which looks at data and comes to conclusions of what does the data really support. And then there are private entities like the Cochrane Collaborative that's worldwide known as in England and makes evidence-based decisions on what does the evidence lead to. And other entities like Hays, that's a private company that I've found over the years to be very helpful in helping you weigh evidence. And all of those entities, and I have quotes here from all of them if you'd like, but all of them come to the conclusion that you cannot come to the conclusion that there's a reduction in breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer, other cancers, multiple sclerosis, suicide, behavioral health benefits, periodontal disease, and some of these things that folks that really feel that vitamin D will help resolve, absolutely, honestly, sincerely, in a heartfelt way, believe that we should do that. They are totally well-intended and really want to help their fellow man and all of us. But these entities that evaluate the science don't come to that conclusion. On this specific bill, as Representative Seaton has described it now, certainly knowing what the vitamin D level would be in women who are pregnant in Alaska and seeing what their babies are would add to the body of knowledge. I think, you know, in this current environment, as you've pointed out, you need to look at what would the fiscal note be, what will it cost in our tight environment there, but that's not frivolous knowledge to know what the vitamin D level is in the women and the babies and to follow them along. As Stephanie Birch said when she was talking, that's not the kind of function that the department and the division and the section are normally engaged in. And I would suggest that if that's something that the legislature feels is important to do for Alaska and for Alaskans, that maybe doing that through the university or another entity might make more sense. It's not frivolous knowledge. There will be a cost, but where I very respectfully disagree with Representative Seaton, because he has a long track record of supporting various things that have made folks healthy and that our folks very much appreciate. But in this particular area, I think we have a respectful disagreement at this point on the benefits of vitamin D. Kind of a long answer.
Are there any other questions?
Representative
Keller.
This is more for Representative Seaton. I just want to say I appreciate the fact that you keep this in front of us. I've learned a couple years ago you would have said vitamin D would have gone in one ear and out the other. I just would ask on the record, if I could, something that I know you will do, and that is keep the CSs going to public health, you know, so we continue to get feedback all around so the decision will be square.
Yeah, so through the chair, Representative Keller, Representative Seaton has been been very gracious in continuing to share the information that he gets with us.
Well, we thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And, you know, as a note, you know, it being part of the Committee on Health and Social Services here, you were tasked with a couple of things, you know, and one thing is this, you know, we know that our budget is $2.6 billion, and it's rising. And as a dentist, I know that the cure is preventive, you know, preventive medicine all the time. If we can prevent something, it'll save us on the other end. And so I really appreciate, you know, you bringing this forward and thinking outside the box. And in reality of it, you know, even though some researchers agree or don't agree on the, you know, the effects of vitamin D, you know, we have to start doing something. And it may not be this, but I appreciate the hard work that you're putting into it. And I also appreciate it that we're going to hear it again, no doubt, you know, as we get cleaned up. So if there's no further, go ahead, Representative.
And thank you. And I'd just like to let the committee know that we're trying to take into account all the attitudes, including that of the Department of Health and Social Services, because in this project, what we're trying to do is partner with someone else, whether it's going to be the Mental Health Trust, whether it's with the insurance companies, whether it's with Providence Hospital, whether it's going to be the Native Health Board and THC, to get that so that we can get that information, promote public health. That data would come back and be available to us to make public decisions on. And so I'm not trying to put the Department of Health and Social Services into the research attitude. We tried to go through the University of Alaska, but they could do the tests, but their tests couldn't be used for diagnostic principles, so the mothers couldn't get the information back to help them. And, you know, I'm in agreement with you. We want to help and promote the health of Alaskans. And so I think that this project will actually get us there, and I'll come back to you, Mr. Chairman, as you requested, with who our partners could be on promoting this. So right. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, with that, we're going to hold this bill over. We're going to keep testimony open, and our next meeting will be on Tuesday, February the 11th. We'll take up HJR 20, and we'll have two presentations from the Office of the Citizens Review and Key Coalition. And with that, we will adjourn. Thank you for your time.